ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनाशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे.
I met Srila Prabhupada in 1973 in San Francisco. I joined the temple and had been recruited for the book distribution party. And we had a good team there in San Francisco. It was always known for being well organized and doing well. San Francisco was a famous book distribution temple. So Prabhupada came there, and a group of us, Sankirtan devotees, got an opportunity to come up and meet Prabhupada in his room. So our temple president was telling Prabhupada that these are the Sankirtan devotees, and he was telling him the scores and how we were doing and so forth. And so Prabhupada looked at us and he said, "You must also read my books." He said, "I have not written these books just for selling. I've written these books for you to read, to become pure devotees, and to go back to Godhead." And I was very struck by that, because I saw that there was a lot of opportunity, or many of the devotees would just work hard all the time and they didn't take time to read. Some of the traveling parties and things, they were really trying to do bigger and bigger. But I already saw directly and heard from Prabhupada directly that he was very eager for us to read. In fact, sometimes when he received information about big Sankirtan that was going on, he would write back and he said, "Are they also reading the books?" So it was something that was very important, that Prabhupada wanted us to imbibe. That word means to drink. Actually, it comes from a Latin word. All of his teachings in his books. And if one goes through the Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Nectar of Devotion, meticulously and repeatedly, you can read 1, 5, 10, 20, 50, 100 times, and you'll never come to the end of it. You won't come to the end of Chaitanya Charitamrita and say, "I've mastered everything, I know all this." I mean, you may say that, but you wouldn't say that. Somebody might say it. But it's not possible. It's like, it's deeper than the ocean. The more you go into reading Prabhupada's books, the more you see how deep it is. In fact, even one verse, you can drill down into one verse and go deeper and deeper. We can spend the next 10 years, you can write a PhD thesis on one verse, on one line. One word from Prabhupada's books. So oftentimes, devotees would collect all kinds of other things. Once Prabhupada noted that chanting Hare Krishna is a very simple process, but I've seen that my devotees are collecting many austere books. Because everyone wants an edge, you know, bring something else. But I've always found that if you take the simple path, but apply it very strictly, then you get the most. And it's the most authorized. And if you go deeply within what's been given already, then you find how deep it is. There was an instruction Prabhupada often gave about reading his books. I hadn't read the teachings of Lord Chaitanya for a while, and read the whole thing last year, last Kartik. And I saw it started with some basic information, history, and then it gets more and more esoteric. It's an amazing book, Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, and I was thinking how we used to distribute that in the early days. It was the first book Prabhupada came out with from Japan, from the Dainippon Press. And we'd be out in parking lots and going door to door. And when I read this book, I was thinking, wow, people really got something valuable. They don't even know it yet. I don't even know it yet. But the more we could enter into this, the more we can appreciate what we actually have. The appreciating capacity is what Prabhupada talks about in the Adi Lila, 4th chapter, 34th verse, the second to the last purport. He speaks about how every species of life has an appreciating capacity. And the human being has the largest capacity, but that's cultivated by hearing and chanting. And the more that you practice devotional service, the more your capacity to appreciate grows. Some people come to the temple and they can't see the deities. Before I came to Krishna consciousness, I had read a book called Be Here Now. It was written by Maivadi. But he is teaching about chanting Rama and seeing everything as God. And I used to chant Rama all the time. And then I look at nature and I think, there's God. I see, you know, from the energy. So when I first came to the temple, they showed me the deities, Shishi Radha Gokula Nanda, in San Francisco. But I was looking at the flower vases. I couldn't see the deities. It took me some time after hearing from Srimad Bhagavatam and being with the devotees that I realized, whoa, there's the forms of God here. Of course, I haven't realized that, but more and more, the appreciating capacity grows as one associates with devotees and goes deeply within the process that's been given by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And about Sankirtan stories, we went out on Sankirtan 2 days ago, if my memory serves properly. Is that true? Is it 2 days ago or three? So I can remember that far back, 2 days ago. We got together in the ashram there in Pune. What is it called? It's the barracks. It's where you all the troops are in the army barracks. And Prabhupada said that this temple compound is meant to be a center from which we go out to fight with Maya. And he said, fighting with Maya means to go out and drop hundreds of thousands of transcendental books into the laps of the conditioned souls. So I like that that's an army barracks over there. And we had a seminar there, and then we went to the big open room there, and there were devotees lined up, and they were giving us books like ammunition. We're loading it into bags. And then we just walked out the door. We didn't know what was going to happen. And we went down towards MG Road, a whole group of us. I think other devotees went in other directions because we had about 60 devotees maybe all together. And on the way to MG Road, we're just looking around and thinking, who might we meet who will take a transcendental literature? And as Prabhu was pointing out, the first person we met on the way there was a dog. He was just sitting there doing nothing. And so I asked Prabhu for some prasadam, and he gave me a little piece of prasadam, and I offered to him, and he jumped up. He didn't take it. He was he wasn't used to people reaching out to him. I think most people just ignore him, or you know, act like he's not there, or you know, practically run him over. So he was unaccustomed to kindness, or even the offer of Mahaprasadam. His appreciating capacity was not quite developed. But we tried, and it felt really good. You know, when we were in Puri last year, I talked about how we had a Sankirtan Yatra. We go on these yatras to go to the holy places and hear and chant. But for me, it needs to be thicker. So we called it a Sankirtan Yatra. So we shipped in huge quantities of books and prasadam. So along with going around the streets of Puri and Mayapur, what we do is we take books with us and we distribute everywhere we go. It really enhances the yatra. But not just the yatra, any activity that you do, if you bring books and prasadam and the holy name, then everywhere you go, you leave in your wake people sitting, reading, taking prasadam. And while we were going through the streets of Puri, I saw there were so many dogs there, and I thought, we should be giving them some prasadam. So I asked Nagar Kirtan, my assistant, he's in the back. I said, Nagar, find out what dogs like. Let's make him some prasadam. So he told me boiled carrots. He looked it up online. He said, dogs like boiled carrots. So we boiled all these carrots. We offered them up. I don't know who we offered them to. And we took out the boiled carrots and we gave them to the dom dogs, and they looked at us like, are you crazy? But we tried. And we were thinking, you know, how to give to the dogs. And then the cows, they like, you know, fruits. We could bring fruits and they eat all kinds of greens and things like that. So you can carry that along too. Sankirtan means, you know, to think about giving. When you have a life of giving, you're always thinking how to give to others, the best thing, what's the best thing you can give. Then you feel satisfied in life, how to serve others by giving them gifts. And everyone likes you too. Wherever you go, if you go with the idea that let me give something to people that's valuable. If you give away what's most valuable, because you can't keep it anyway, you can't keep things. They just come and go out. We're not meant to keep things. Tena tyaktena bhunjita. We get things set aside for us naturally by Krishna. So whatever else we have, we're meant to give out. That's really the blissful life. And that's what Sankirtan means. And we have these vessels. They're actually containers. The books hold it within them. The highest of, and best kinds of seeds that go out and plant themselves in people's hearts and minds. So we went out, the dog didn't take, and we were, felt a little rejected. But we carried on somehow or other. And we went into the town, and we started meeting people and showing them the transcendental literatures. And Bhima was ahead of us, so we had a, he moves really fast. He goes in all these places and everyone gets a book and then he moves on to the next place. So we had to switch sides of the street or something to stay out of the wake of Bhima. And just going up and down the street, we met all kinds of people who were very interesting. I met one Muslim man, I said, Salaam Alaikum. He said, that's right, Salaam Alaikum, no Hare Krishna. And I just kept walking and thinking, I didn't have to do much for that one. But still he said Hare Krishna. And you know, if we hadn't gone walking down the street, he wouldn't have done his Hare Krishna for the day. That's the benefit of walking around and just trying to give things out. If you chant your rounds and you read, and then you go out with this some love in your heart, and you just want to do good for others, then good things happen. And that's what Vaishnavas are meant to do. They're meant to make the world a better place. You just go out and do good for others. Just think, how can I do good for every living entity? If you're thinking like that when you meet people, they'll be very intrigued. They'll think, I've never met anybody like this that just wants to do good for me. I've met people that do good for me, but they want something in return. Of course, we want something in return too. But it's different. In fact, when I do Sankirtan seminars, I always start with talking these days about donations, because that's one of the ways in which people hesitate, devotees hesitate to go out. They'll think, how am I going to ask for a donation? But actually, that's the best part. That's the part where there's an actual connection that you have, that you see somebody makes a sacrifice for Krishna. So what I talk about in my seminars is how Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, don't give this knowledge to people who aren't devoted or austere. So one of the ways in which we qualify them to read a Bhagavad Gita or any of the other books is ask them to give something. Because once they do, it's a little austerity that they have to do. And Prabhupada mentioned this. He said, if they give something, then they'll think, what did I give $10 to this nonsense person for? And they'll think, what did this nonsense give to me for my $10? And they'll take it home and they'll start reading it because they gave something. And also, the way in which I ask for donations is the way I've evolved in my process of book distribution over the years. It's my own realization. But I had to be very straightforward with people when I ask for donations. So when I ask, I say, we don't sell it like in a bookstore. We only ask for a donation, but we don't need the money. The only reason we ask is because it's an ancient tradition. When you give something in return for spiritual knowledge, it connects you to the previous teachers who have passed it down over many generations, and it allows you to enter deeply within the knowledge. And when people hear that, they can relate to it. It's very honest. It's very straightforward. It's very commonsensical. They can understand that, yes, I'm being given some transcendental knowledge. I should give something in return. And not just in India, where they know the principle of dakshina, but also all over the world. If you tell people that, they go, oh yeah, that makes sense. It's not a sales thing. And this person isn't after anything. They're only after helping me. So even asking for donation, people can feel that you're trying to do good for them. So this is an exciting prospect to go out. It's a challenge to go out and meet people and introduce them to the transcendental literature. And then by your own spiritual potency, induce them to give something of themselves, even if it's a token in the form of money, to show that they're devoted, and then they can appreciate this. So we met a lot of people. We went in stores. We went in a bakery. Man said he didn't want it. He didn't want to give. We kept talking to him, and he said he didn't want to give. But I left him the book anyway. He said, "I'll come to the temple." How many times have you heard that? "I'll come later." Do you ever hear that on Sankirtan? Three people heard that? Everyone's heard it. "Yeah, I'll come later." I always tell people, "Yeah, that's a really good idea. You should come to the temple." I said, "But right now, the temple came to you. And this is an unusual circumstance." I say, "You know, what are the chances? I live in America, you live here in India, and I'm going randomly to all these places. This must be for a reason that we came here to your place. It's not an accident." And sometimes people tell me that, "I'll do it later." And I say, "That's fine, no problem. Thank you very much. But one thing, I want to tell you a story before I go." They say, "Oh, what?" People like stories. And I say, "Once there was a bee, and the bee flew into a lotus garden, and it landed on the sweetest lotus of all. And it was enjoying so much that when the night came on and the lotus started to close, a rishi came through and told the bee, 'You must get out now.' And the bee said, 'Tomorrow I'll get out when the sun comes back up.' And the rishi said, 'Beware,' and he walked away. And the bee went to sleep inside the lotus, feeling very comfortable. And that night, a maddened elephant came through the forest and into the garden and started scooping up all of the lotuses, and he ate them all. And so went the bee." And when I tell people that, they go, "All right, here's a donation." I told two young Americans that. I think they were high on something. It was in the Haight-Ashbury area. Young people, sort of on some kind of drug. But I was showing them the books. They said, "Ah, very nice, but we'll come back later." And I told them the whole story. And they go, "Wow, really? That really happened?" And I said, "Yep." And they said, "Okay, we'll give you a donation." So, Sankirtan, it requires some coaxing people in some ways, giving them philosophy that they can understand and appreciate so they can engage in Krishna's service. And this is something that taxes the brain, and you have to stay on the edge of your sadhana so that you can have some potency to go out and meet people. So it's a good combination, chanting Hare Krishna and going out for book distribution. What else? One, two.
So you will often meet people who say, that we already have enough of these books, and they are still waiting. So let me first wait that, then I'll process. But it's a common argument found. It shows that they do not have the books. So what can be the logic used at that time?
Well, a lot of times when people say, "I won't read it," or they say that a lot. I'll say that actually you don't have to read this book, because this book is a transcendental object, and when you put it in your home, it will attract good fortune. And then I ask them, "Do you know where good fortune comes from?" And I don't let them answer. I keep talking. I say, "I'll tell you where it doesn't come from. It doesn't come from working harder." Says a lot of people, they work 2-3 jobs and they still don't get ahead. And some other people, they don't do anything and they get ahead. I said, good fortune comes from the spiritual level. Then I tell him there's a science called Vastu. And in Vastu, it's taught that every object in our life has an influence on our consciousness. I said, so a spiritual object has a spiritual influence. You may not see it, but it actually is there. Just like if you put iron next to a big magnet, it'll attract. The magnetic force is there, which you can't see, but you can see the effect. So I said, in the same way, when you put this book in your house, then it'll attract good fortune. And sometimes they say, I don't believe that. And I said, that's the best part. It works, even if you don't believe in it. I know, Sankirtan's fun, huh? What else? Yes, Prabhu.
So we heard Nada Damodar Vaspati, this shade regarding Nada Damodar Vaspati and Sankirtan.
Well, the Radha Damodar Bus Party was started by Vishnu Jana Maharaj, and later Tamal Krishna Maharaj joined him. And they bought these Greyhound buses, they're passenger buses, and they would have them converted into Sankirtan. Actually, they were temples. Each temple had a set of deities, Gaur-Nitai deities, except for the Radha Damodar bus, it had Shishi Radha Damodar. They were in the mood of Gaur-Nitai. Because they used to go around everywhere on Sankirtan. They're Vishnu Jana Maharaj's deities. And actually, one year in Chicago, 1975, Prabhupada was there, and we had this huge yajna. Oh, dozens of devotees got initiated, and also Prabhupada installed about five or six sets of Gaur-Nitai deities. They were all on the altar, these beautiful Gaur-Nitai deities. And they all went on these different buses. So they kept getting more and more buses. And they were constructed inside like a temple. There was a kitchen in there. And then the deity, there was an altar. Everything could be snapped down, so when the bus was moving, you know, things didn't fly around. And the devotees would stay in on those buses, and underneath, they'd keep thousands of books. And so sometimes there's 6, 7, 8, 10 brahmacharis driving around on these buses. Each one of them is a separate traveling temple. Prabhupada liked them. He went out for a ride on the bus. He liked the program, the traveling, going out in different places. And so the buses would go all over the country, and the devotees would do events, and they'd... Vishnu Jana Maharaj was a musician, professional musician before he came. He was like a demigod. And he set up programs where they did these really beautiful kirtans. And they would go to college campuses and would attract a lot of young people. And they'd get interested and they'd get on the bus and they'd drive off. Back in those days too, ISKCON was a little wild. So sometimes the bus would come into a temple and then all the brahmacharis from the temple would get on the bus and leave. You wake up in the morning, hey, where'd everybody go? They just joined the bus party and took off. That was what we called the Wild Wild West. So that was going on, and there were other parties as well. There was a BBT traveling party that was centered out of Chicago, but back in the early 70s, we had won a court case where we got permission to work inside the airports all over America. And we did do that. We worked in all the airports. People thought there were a lot more devotees than there were, because everywhere, every airport they went to, they saw devotees. So they thought, you guys are everywhere. And sometimes on like a crowded Friday night, you know, because there's devotees out in every airport distributing books, and people would be flying from one place to next. They'd fly from St. Louis to New York, and they'd buy a book in St. Louis. They'd get off in New York, and someone would say, hi. Here, take a look at this. They'd see another book. We'd see people getting off the plane with books that just came in from other airports and things. So that airport party, we covered all the airports all around America. And later on, that party and the Radha Damodar party merged together as one. So there's a lot written by that, Radha Damodar Vilas by Vyasa Ki Prabhu. tells a lot more of the details of that, of those days of the traveling party. But the point is that it's a big wide world out there, and what we're looking for is spiritual entrepreneurs. Just like, you know, in America there's some famous entrepreneurs. You've heard of HP? What's HP? Yeah, you've heard of them, right? It's a big company, isn't it? How about Apple? You ever heard of Apple? Say yes. Yeah, they, both of them have in common, both those corporations started in a little garage. HP, Hewlett and Packard, started in a little garage tinkering away for their electronic products. And so did Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak. They started in a garage, in his father's garage, putting together the first motherboards that they wanted to sell, the computing devices. But from there, they made incremental improvements and they developed what now Apple's the biggest company in the world. And how did they do it? From a small garage? Just by organization and innovation and persistence. So same way, Prabhupada started in a little dusty place. That tiny little room in Radhadamodar. But he had a big idea and he took it out to the world. And then he started a huge spiritual corporation that spans the whole world, every continent. Because as mentioned in the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita by Kaviraj Goswami, that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the greatest spiritual capitalist. He's ready to back anybody who goes out to perform Sankirtan and take a risk. So that kind of innovation, going out into the world and just trying to give people Krishna consciousness, is a very desired and lucrative spiritual activity. What else? Yes?
Hare Krishna. Thank you for the enlightening class for the past 3-4 days. Prabhuji, could you please share some of the tricks that was used by Tukka, you know, in terms of this situation, how does he does, and also about Rameshwar?
Well, Rameshwar came to Los Angeles, and he as a, as Prabhupada said, of all my disciples, he may have, he has some brains. He's a little intelligent. He's a very intelligent person. And a good organizer. So in Los Angeles, he just started as a brahmachari, you know, carrying books around and doing things. But he'd see things and he'd start to act on them. And gradually he got recognized as an organizer. And just step by step, he rose to a position where he was in charge of the BBT and worked directly with under Prabhupada. And that was the first BBT actually in the West. There was one in India, started in India, and one in America. But that was the main BBT for all the English speaking books. And he organized that whole thing. He was in charge of the BBT by 1975. The pre-press was all out in New York City, but he moved it all to Los Angeles so that everybody could be under one roof and they could work more efficiently. Prabhupada wanted centralization for the BBT as much as possible so that it could really grow. He wanted it to be a viable business so it could spread all over the world and be very powerful. And so Prabhupada came to LA in 1975. Rameshwar had bought the highest tech equipment he could for printing. And they were increasing the speed of printing. They had all the experts from around the world working in the BBT. Best artists, best editors. And so Prabhupada came there and he invited all the GBCs from around the world to come there because he had a message to deliver. Prabhupada was writing the Chaitanya Charitamrita at the time. In fact, he had finished. He really pushed hard to finish because there was a professor named Edward Dimmock, who was a specialist in Gaudiya Vaishnavism, especially, and he had written his own copy of Chaitanya Charitamrita. It hadn't been published yet. Prabhupada wanted his to be published before Dimmock's came out. And so Prabhupada came there, and he wasn't satisfied with the rate at which books were coming out. He wanted everything to go faster. He always pushed us. He wanted us to distribute more. He'd tell us to double it. Whenever we did big, he said, do more, double it again. And he also wanted the books to come out faster. As he was not even sleeping. He didn't sleep. He spent time writing his books. So when he came there to LA, there was a famous morning walk on Venice Beach. And I told you, he invited all the GBCs from around the world to come there at that time, because he had a message to deliver, and here's how he delivered it. They were walking down the beach, and Prabhupada wanted to know when the books were going to be published, because the BBT was behind Prabhupada in getting them out. So Rameshwar was very happy to report to Prabhupada that they could print a book every 2 months, which was way faster than they'd ever done before, because they got all this new equipment, they brought all the special devotees to help. And Prabhupada stopped and he said, I want all of the 17 books that were in arrears, including the whole Chaitanya Charitamrita and part of the fifth canto. I want all of it in 2 months. And Rameshwar said, but Prabhupada, that's impossible. And he was right, it was impossible at that time. And Prabhupada replied, impossible is a word used in a fool's dictionary. And he turned around and kept walking. And Rameshwar and Radhabalava were the two people in charge of that BBT. They just stood there with their mouths open. And they realized that we have to do this because the spiritual master had just given us a direct order. And Rameshwar said, in a moment, he decided within himself, no matter what, he was going to do it, even though it was impossible. And as soon as he decided in himself that I'm going to do this, the energy started to flow, the intelligence came into his mental system of how he would do it. And he and Radhabalava were having such an intense exchange that Rameshwar told me that if anybody was watching them walk down the beach and watching their exchange, they would think that they were crazy people. The way they were talking. So many ideas about how to do it. So they caught up to Prabhupada, practically breathless. And they said, we'll do it, Prabhupada. And they had concessions they wanted from Prabhupada to be able to finish it. One of the things that always slowed the book publishing process down was the art. Because Prabhupada was, as a visionary, all his books have these beautiful paintings. And that's how we really sold the books, as we show the paintings. We go through and say, look at this, look at that. People go, wow, that's amazing, we'll take it. And so it took a long time for each painting to be not only painted, but approved by Prabhupada, because he had to look at them. Jadarani told me, she was one of the early artists, and she said, we didn't know what the spiritual world looked like. We just read the manuscript, and Prabhupada told us, you paint these pictures of the Leelas. And they went back to Prabhupada. This is when the first Krishna book was coming out. They said, Prabhupada, we're not expert. We're just beginners. How can we paint pictures that will justify showing the Supreme Personality of Godhead to the world? And Prabhupada said, you go before the canvas and you pray. They wanted to go to school and learn more. And he said, no, you go sit in front of the canvas and pray. And those first 52 prints that came out, they were the result of very new artists painting. One of Srila Radhanath Maharaj told me recently that he knew one of the famous artists of India, I think Sharma, and who had seen those pictures, and he said, they're so innocent and beautiful and full of devotion. So those pictures took a long time, and Prabhupada had to approve each one of them. So they said, we need to put some photographs in. That's why you see photographs in the Chaitanya Charitamrita instead of a lot of paintings, because that took a lot less time. But still back then it was a big deal, because the photographer Bhargava had to come to India to take photographs of the holy places. And they're in the books there. So for 2 months there was a marathon in Los Angeles with all the devotees stopped. All of the activities except for working together, hundreds of them, and many devotees flew in from other parts of the world to help this marathon in 2 months to print the whole Chaitanya Charitamrita. Halfway through the marathon, 15 days through, they had the first installments of the books printed. And Rameshwar had them placed on the altar before Mangalarti. No one even knew they were there yet. They were advanced copies. And so when the Mangalartik, the devotees were so intensely engaged when the curtains opened from the Mangalartik and they saw the fruit of their work on the altar in the form of Chaitanya Charitamrita, Rameshwar told me everyone was weeping. The tears were coming down their faces from seeing that that was actually manifesting Prabhupada's desire. Prabhupada gave them 2 months and they finished the whole project in 2 months and 1 day. And Prabhupada wrote them a letter of congratulations, guaranteeing that every one of them would go back to Godhead. And then he said, and by the way, you're 1 day late. And that was the mood. Prabhupada was always pushing. It was exciting because he never knew what was going to happen next. And that's why Sankirtan is important, because it's always a fresh challenge. There's never a point at which you say, you know, we've done enough. We've done enough books. We've grown enough. But in our party back in ISV, ISKCON Silicon Valley, it was just a little place. And, you know, we've always based everything on Sankirtan. And every time we've made new goals. We've never missed a goal. We've always made our goals from the very beginning. And the devotees live by that they have to make it. Makes life exciting. And we've set goals and then we think, how are we going to do this? It seems impossible. Every time. It's like, we did it last time, but that was special. You know, we got a donation and we met this person and things happened. How could it ever happen again? But it always does. Because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the wealthiest spiritual capitalist and he backs anyone who takes a chance. And this is where the life is in the Krishna consciousness movement. You have to put yourself on the edge. You have to take huge risks. You might as well, because life can be over at any second anyway. And so you might as well put yourself on the very cutting edge of the movement and try to extend yourself in ways that maybe seem a little scary. And Sankirtan's always like that, because you don't know what's going to happen next. So Rameshwar was one of the great pioneers of book distribution in the world. He had so many innovations. Tripurari Maharaj is a good friend of mine. He was one of the, Prabhupada called him the incarnation of book distribution. He came to he joined in Los Angeles. His name was Thomas Beaudry, Bhakta Thomas. And before he came, he had received some books. And he read them on his own, and then before he joined the temple, he started going out and distributing them. And devotees met him, and they said, you can't do that. You have to join the temple first. So he joined, and he started going out, and he would go out and chant by himself, with some kartals, and then he'd stop and distribute. And devotees started noticing that he was selling a lot of small books. So one devotee, Sarvaboma, was a Sankirtan devotee there in LA at the time. He said, how many big books are you selling, Bhakta Thomas? He said, not any. I'm not taking any out with me. He said, yeah, you should take one out. He said, how do I sell a big book? And Sarvabhauma said, you pray to Prabhupada. So Tripurari went to the deities and he prayed to Prabhupada, and please show me how to strip this book. So he went out and he had his small books, and the big book was in his bag, and all day he was distributing. And then at the end of the day, he was talking to some lady, and she was buying a small book. She said, wait a minute, "What's that other book in your bag?" And he said, "What? What book?" He had forgotten he had it. I said, "That one right there." Said, "Oh, this. Yeah, this is Teachings of Lord Chaitanya." And she said, "I want that one." And she bought the book. And he went home thinking, this praying to Prabhupada really works. And then he started selling big books, and then he became famous for selling big books. It was like a breakthrough. He had some kind of mystical power. And then he started this BBT party in Chicago. We were all based there. And in 1975, we went to Chicago, and somebody complained. I think it was Brahmananda. He told Prabhupada, "Is this Tripurari? I was on his party. We had about 28 devotees. And we travel all over America and go to train different devotees how to distribute books." And then Brahmananda complained to Prabhupada. He said, "Prabhupada, this Tripurari," and he'd just taken sannyas. He said, "This Tripurari Swami, he doesn't have a GBC." Prabhupada said, "He doesn't need a GBC." Prabhupada would encourage the preachers. You know, he wanted that spirit that devotees would go out and innovate and take risks. Spiritual entrepreneurialism. Is that enough? Okay. Something. Hare Krishna. Mataji needs the yellow mic. The Manipali party is here. Well, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave an open order. That this is the beauty of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement. He ordered everybody to go out and distribute this. Every person, he said, "I order every person, every human being to go out and distribute this." So when Krishna gives an order, it's a manifestation of his internal potency. This is a direct quote from Prabhupada's purport from the Chaturshloki Bhagavatam, the second canto. He says, "The order of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is a manifestation of His internal potency. And it is by that potency that one comes to see the Lord face to face." So, this is called effective speech. This is mentioned by Jiva Goswami in the Tattvasandarbha. So now, if you go to the court, and there's the right situation is, there's a judge, and the judge went to law school. He got ordained as a bona fide judge. With me so far? Yeah. Then he gets appointed as a judge, and he's in a courtroom. And it's a bona fide session where people are being judged. So in that situation, when the person comes in to be judged, and then the judge can say, "This person should be hanged." Then what happens? What happens? He gets hanged. And then somebody else comes in and says, "This man should get $1 million. Then what happens? He gets $1 million, right? So what if the judge just, he has his robes on and everything like that, but he's hanging out like, you know, at a grocery store. And he says, "This man should be hanged." Then what happens? Nothing. He said, "This man should get $1 million. What happens? Nothing. So when the situation is right, when the person is authorized and the speech is uttered, then it has its effect. So when the Supreme Personality of Godhead comes and officially makes a statement and it gets written down in Shastra, witnessed by all the sadhus, it's there, it's effective, it's live. It's sitting there live, like a live wire. You touch the live wire, you get electrocuted. If you grab the order, you can be anybody. It doesn't matter. You can be the worst person in the universe, the most unqualified. But if you get it in your head that I'm going to pick up this order, why not? It's an open order and you pick it up. Then you've got the live spiritual wire. So everyone's qualified to take this up. And Prabhupada used to say, just when Shyamasundara Malati's little child was named Saraswati. Actually, I was distributing books in the LA airport, and this young woman came over, and I was showing her a book, and I was going through it, and she said, "Yeah, I know something about this." I said, "Really? What do you know about it?" I said, "Oh, my parents." I said, "What about your parents?" "They, yeah, they have these books and stuff." And I said, "Who are your parents?" She said, "Malati and Shyamasundara." I said, "You're Saraswati." And so Prabhupada used to say, when she'd see Saraswati, you know, going up to people, say, "You know who is Krishna?" And they go, "Who?" And he said, "It's the Supreme Personality of Godhead." See, she's preaching. So anyone can pick up the order and go out and try. And Krishna will empower you if you just try. Yes, Prabhu? Here comes the yellow mic. MSF means Monthly Sankirtan Festival. So we started this little temple in a dusty little garage, which is a true story. Actually, we just put in a new altar that we had carved in. Just while I was going away, we had to move the deities and put them back on this altar. And the altar that we had for so many years was built by a brahmachari. He was very expert, but he built it by hand. It was quaint, but it was built in the first little dusty garage where ISV started, in somebody's house. We had the deities, that we inherited those deities, and at first they were in a little house, and then we moved to a storefront. And I got involved in that project at about 1999, and I went there and I started congregating with some of the devotees. There were a few brahmacharis there. That was a few people. And then they said, "We'd like to build a new temple. Would you, you know, be part of our thing and talk to us and maybe come and advise us?" They were forming a little board. So I went there and they said, "Here's our dream. We want to build a temple on the hill." I said, "Well, if that's what you want to do, I'm not interested, because I'm not into building temples. I like Sankirtan. And if you do Sankirtan, then everything else will come. If you do enough Sankirtan, Krishna will come and drop a temple on your head." And actually, we got a new temple. And I was sitting there with the devotees, say, "See, Krishna dropped a temple on her head. You just do Sankirtan." So they said, "Okay, you tell us about Sankirtan." So I started telling them about the dusty garage and, you know, the whole thing. So we were planning for Sankirtan. And we were thinking where to start. So he said, "Well, at least," because it was all householders. There were a couple brahmacharis, but mostly householders, you know, encompassed the program. And so he said, "Let's start once a month. We'll go out one weekend every month on Sankirtan and see how we can do." It just started with one day. So the devotees went out that one day together. I think there was about six or seven devotees. And when they came back, they were so enlivened. They said, "Let's do it every week." And I said, "Let's not. Let's do it every month." And then they went out every month for a few months, and they said, "This is hard. Let's do it every other month." And I said, "Let's not. Let's do it every month." And that's when we decided to call it the Monthly Sankirtan Festival. And the idea was that at least once a month, we'd have a point in time that we'd build towards, where everybody in the community would feel welcome to come out at least for an hour or two or three. As Prabhupada in the old days told us that everybody in the temple should go out. Everybody. He said you can leave one pujari back to take care of the deities. And we used to do that in New York. I lived in that big building called, that big 340 West 55th building. It was about 14 stories high in the middle of Manhattan. And we bought that building, and 300 devotees lived there. And one day a month, all the devotees would go out. One pujari would stay back and do everything else. And I was thinking at those times, because there are mothers going out pushing a little baby stroller, and they'd have Ishapanishad stuck in the side, And we were brahmacharis at the time, and we were thinking, like, what are they going to do? They don't know how to do sankirtan. Like, what's the significance of all this? And so then, at the end, the next day, when I heard all the scores of a lot of people each doing a little bit, I was amazed that when everybody works together and does their level best as a team, what a huge result there can be. Young people, old people, babies, mothers, everybody just doing whatever they can. So I always kept that idea within my mind. So we came up with this philosophy that a lot of people, a lot of devotees, each doing a little bit. Because it's a stable model. If we have a few people doing a lot, then it can be, it can waver. But a lot doing a little is a very stable model. So we started doing that monthly Sankirtan festival. And then gradually it increased more and more. And the goals kept getting bigger and bigger. We started by, you know, we would be able to just do 20 or 30 books, and we thought that was great. I remember when the devotees would call me on the phone and they said, I just distributed a book. I did one book today. And I would just feel so proud of them and so happy. And I'd say, this is wonderful how you did that. And now those same devotees are selling 10 sets of Bhagavatams in one day. And the devotees there, you know, in one month they used to sell maybe a couple hundred books. Now they're selling 30, 40, 50,000 books in one month through all different kinds of organization. They came up with this Motel Gita program, which is, they've distributed almost 500,000 Bhagavad Gitas to motels. They're sitting in the drawers and things. So this started just in a simple, humble way in a tiny little temple with devotees working together. And now the MSF, we call the Monthly Sankirtan Festival, that idea has spread all over the world. People are practicing it because we have huge numbers of devotees, especially in the congregations. And these devotees, they want to go out on Sankirtan. They just need facility. And if you create a point in time, at least once a month, when they can all go out together and have fun and feel supported, and just go out for a little while and distribute books together, then it raises them to a higher platform. They move from Kanishtha Adhikari to Madhyama Adhikari and become very thoughtful, powerful devotees. So this monthly Sankirtan festival is something that His Grace Radhe Shyam Prabhu likes very much. And I like Radhe Shyam Prabhu. So that's why I came here in the first place. Because I know wherever Radhe Shyam Prabhu is, there's success. Because as far as I'm concerned, he's the smartest devotee on the planet. And so, you know, I just wanted to bring the idea of monthly Sankirtan festival here. And we went to Tirupati, and then so many devotees came from Pune there. And we went to Delhi, devotees from Pune came there. And I said, I'm going to Pune, because that's where it's happening. And I just, you know, there's, say, 3,000, 5,000, 10,000 congregation members. What would be the harm in all of them going out once a month? I mean, where's the harm? Is there any harm in 5,000 devotees going out on book distribution at least one day a month? Is there? Seriously, I'm asking. Is there any harm in that? There's some major harm to the material energy. You can do some major damage. You see kids and mothers and babies and everyone coming down the street armed with books. That's a fearsome sight to the agents of Kali Yuga. They don't like it. They'll close their shops and like, oh no. So I don't see any harm in it. I think it's a beautiful vision. That's my vision. That Pune, you know, the shining temple on the hill with the most exalted devotees from all over the world congregated in one place. And if, you know, if anybody can do this, put 5,000 devotees out on one day, it's Pune. So it's not very hard. The only hard part is troop movement. It's just how to get all the devotees from point A to point B. The rest is easy. Because Sankirtan's easy. You just go around and make friends with people and exchange gifts. So the monthly Sankirtan festival is very practical, and it lifts the whole community. And I highly recommend it. Anything else about that? Okay. Yes, Prabhu? And if you had more over there? Okay. Here comes the yellow mic. Oh, I got a note. Okay. You want to go first, and I'll read the note as the crescendo. Okay, here's the note. What are the challenges that come in book distribution life by that he is discouraged to do this service, and what precaution should be taken earlier so that he remained enthusiastic in his whole life? Well, one of the challenges is to not do good sadhana. Your sadhana has to be strong. There's four laws of book distribution. First is your sadhana must be strong, because the energy for the Sankirtan movement comes from strong sadhana. The second law of book distribution is get books. And we've done thorough studies on this. We've taken it to universities all over the world. And we've had the greatest minds working on this. And they discovered that you can't distribute books that you don't have. So that's why the second law is so powerful. And the third is, the more you show, the more you sell. And the fourth is, you must organize. So strong sadhana is the beginning. It's a challenge. And if you keep a strong emphasis on sadhana, and also considering that book distribution is high sadhana, it's not just for book selling, it's for our own purification, self-purification. If you keep that understanding, then the challenges are very few for stopping book distribution. And what precautions should be taken earlier so that we remained enthusiastic for the whole life? Same answer. Good sadhana, and you have to take care of your health too. So you can't sacrifice your health for your service, because then you can't do your service. So you have to make sure that you take care of yourself physically. You have to eat right. You have to exercise. And make sure that you get enough rest. Don't overstrain the robot, because it'll break. Okay? Oh, it was you. Who is this? You, thank you. Hare Krishna. Yes, Prabhu?
I'm not sure whether to ask this question to you or not, but I can't stop myself asking this question.
Oh my God.
What is the secret behind your such an enduring enthusiasm?
That's a good one, you know, because that's what we ask people out there. I tell the number one question you ask people on Sankirtan, and we were just out the other day, I ask people this. I say, what's your secret? Because you know, I give them the book and I say, you look spiritual. What's your secret? You're trying it on me, right? Well, if I have any secret, I mentioned it the other day in class. I take shelter of advanced devotees. I don't have much qualification for anything that I do. The main qualification that I have, I know how to take help. I can recognize people who are advanced and have, you know, good knowledge. I see that there are people out there that are naturals in certain things. And I make friends with them. And I take shelter of them. So I keep a long list of people that I can keep in touch with. And I'm not afraid to take shelter of them in any circumstance. When problems come up, I know who to call. When I have questions, philosophical in certain areas, I know who to talk to. So this is my secret. It's finding out who the experts are, who the advanced devotees are, and then making them my mentors. You know, and that's been very helpful for me throughout my life. Yes?
I wanted to hear that if any specific inspiring incidents which you had with His Holiness Radha Swami Maharaj, if you can share with all of us.
Every moment is inspiring. Just being in the same vicinity or on the same planet is inspiring. Just to know that there's somebody out there that, I mean, there's somebody like that walking around. And, you know, right now he's somewhere giving his heart to somebody, helping to elevate them in Krishna consciousness is inspiring. So every moment. But my favorite is taking prasadam with him, because when he comes to my house, we sit across from each other and my wife serves, and he does whatever I do. That's his way of expressing affection. If I put pepper, he puts at his plate same amount. If I take one pancake, he takes one. If I take two, he takes two. If I take three, I take three. She says, how many do you want? Says, ask him first. He's unique in all ways. And he's the great treasure of the world. What more can be said? So many things. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much for giving your lives to Krishna consciousness. Those of you who are brahmacharis, this is the greatest wealth to live by, simply internalizing the process of Krishna consciousness, not having any needs or desires other than to increase your sadhana. These are this is the great value of the human life. You're taking full advantage of it. Just do that. Every second is valuable. And you're taking full advantage. Continue to do that. All of you who are preaching around the world, keep doing this, because this is the most coveted service, to go out and preach. You'll see it from all the great acharyas. And to distribute Srila Prabhupada's books is the greatest of all boons, because it's good for the whole world and it's good for each individual person who receives a book. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Gaur Premanande Nitai Gaura Hari Gaur Hari Gaur Hari Gaur Nitai Gaura Hari Gaur Nitai Gaura Hari Gaur Hari Gaur Hari Gaur Nitai Gaura Hari Vanchakalpudrvishya kripasindadeva cha patitanam pavanibhyo vaishnavibhyo namo namaha. Hare Krishna. If you took one of the Radha Krishna bowl bhajans, if you'll bring it up here, we'll give you an exchange gift in return. Because I need those for Vrindavan. Thank you. Natchari Ar Marman, Natchari Ar Marman, hey! Natchari Ar Marman, Natchari Ar Marman, Natchari Ar Marman, Natchari Ar Marman.